Alrighty, hour number three of our radio program. That's right, it is the Zach Gelb Show, live in San Antonio on Westwood One's Radio Row for the Final Four. They have convinced me to stick around here for the games on Saturday, and then I'll be back Monday. Monday's going to be an interesting travel day, folks. I have a 7.05 a.m. Central Time flight, which is 8.05 a.m. Central Time. Now, I am either... My preference is to be on an aisle on a plane. On the way down here, I had to sit in a window seat. The last time I had to sit in a window seat was last year when we were going to the Final Four to Phoenix. The window seat, Stu, is actually not as bad as I recalled it, especially if you have an early morning flight. You put your head on the side of the plane. Hopefully the plane doesn't bust on open like we've seen with some of these videos on, what is it, those 739 planes or whatever are, I think are the numbers. And hopefully you get there from point A to point B all and well. But the one thing that I am dreading and the one thing that I just hate whenever I have to fly is if you have to take a middle seat. Now, the last time I had to take a middle seat was when – my flight got canceled coming back from Kansas City from the NFL draft, where 15 of our coworkers got back, no problem. My flight, they make me sit in the airport for 7 to 9 hours, and they go, oh, it's canceled. I had to spend an extra night in Kansas City. I like Kansas City. I was there for 3 days, though, so I didn't need to be there for a fourth day. And I had Ranger playoff tickets, and those cost a pretty penny, and I ended up having to give someone at the station a deal because I just had to get rid of them at the last second. So I had a connecting flight back from Kansas City, originally direct, but I wanted to get out there the next day. So it was a connecting flight. I think I landed in Detroit. And it was Detroit back to New York, which is only 2 hours. Not that bad. And I was in the middle. Well, because, and I appreciate the folks at the National Association of Basketball Coaches, they asked me to MC their big award breakfast that comes your way in San Antonio on Sunday. So I'm very appreciative that they asked me to do that. And that means I'm going to be sticking around here till Sunday. They got me into the game on Saturday, so I'll see Duke go up against Houston and then Florida go up against Auburn. When I had to reschedule the flight, though, from Saturday morning, which had a nice comfy aisle seat, to then Monday morning, there was only middle seats available. So now I'm in a middle seat for, I think it's 4 hours and 30 minutes on the way back from San Antonio. Now, if this was Zach Gelb 3-4 years ago, Zach Gelb in a middle seat would be very uncomfortable. I don't think I'm going to be so comfortable, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as how much weight I used to carry around all those years ago. So I'm dreading the middle seat here, Stuart.
Yeah, that could be tough. And hopefully there's not a lot of big fellas, you know, former basketball players.
Like how you had on your flight down at the 7-foot
like
guy.
Yeah, the guy next to me was ginormous. Actually, I had a aisle seat for tomorrow morning, and I moved it to a window seat.
Ooh.
Because I figured I'm probably going to sleep like 4 hours tonight. I might as well get the window seat in.
Especially how much Stu parties here.
Oh, no.
Let me tell you, I thought this was a work trip. Stu having himself a lot of fun these last two nights. I had to say, you know, calm down there, Tiger. You got to get up tomorrow. You got to work. And I don't have to like pick Stu up out of the Riverwalk.
Yeah, that would not have been a good ending of our trip, but. But yeah, I will probably sleep on the plane early tomorrow morning, hopefully.
Okay. I really hope there's like a petite human being sitting next to me, and then I make them feel bad for me being large, and they'll be like, oh, I'll give you my aisle or I'll give you my window. That's what I'm going to hope. Maybe I'll wear a fat suit heading onto the plane so I could look a lot bigger, and then maybe they go, okay, we don't want this person sitting in the middle. So that's the way that that all did play out. Now, I know a lot of people probably listen. They're like, oh, play the small violin for Gelb. He has to stay in San Antonio and go to the Final Four and then go MC some breakfast. But, Monday morning is going to be an adventure. I land at Newark at noon, and then I'll bolt right to the New York City studios and we'll do the show. So I know some people are questioning my energy today.
I saw that.
Yeah. You know what? Whenever you do these shows on remote, and I'm in one of these convention centers, and there's other shows, and I just know I'm so loud. I kind of sometimes feel a little insecure or maybe like a little bit naked where I'm like, oh, you know, I don't want people to be looking back and be like, oh, there's that bloviating national jackass who's so loud and so boisterous. So not that I try to tone down the energy, but it's just one of those spots where I'm not in my happy place, my comfort zone of being in the studio. So that's kind of what that's been. But yeah. Monday, I will probably be sleeping in between breaks, if I'm being honest, with how little sleep I'm going to get coming up on Sunday night into Monday morning, where I have to get up early for the flight. Anyway, Nate Oates is going to stop by in 15 minutes from now, the head basketball coach at Alabama. But without further ado, and I'm not talking about Freddie Adu, it's time to get to a little onside offside on this Friday. Ryan Botcher, hit it!
Zach's taking on the most polarizing issues in sports. Which side of the line of scrimmage will he end up on?
Offside! Defense number 69!
It's Onsides, Offsides with Zach Gelb.
Alrighty, Stuart, what do we got cooking here on Onside Offside?
Alright, so the drama Dallas choking Cowboys, as you like to call them, they have found a new backup for Dak Prescott. Trey Lance is gone, he has signed with the Chargers. And yesterday, the Cowboys, they acquired Joe Milton in a 7th-round pick from your Patriots in exchange for a 5th-rounder. Now, Milton last year was a 6th-round pick. Looked pretty good in New England's Week 18 matchup against the Bills. As you remember, he completed 22 of 29 for 241 yards.
Him. Bleep him.
Yeah.
Hey, he cost me definitely getting Travis Hunter or Abdul Carter. Now he's no longer on the team.
Yeah.
F him.
Dude, you just got one good start out of him. 240 yards, a passing touchdown, and a rushing touchdown as well in that Week 18 game. Onsides, offsides, the Patriots should have gotten more than just that 5th-round pick that they got for Milton.
So my roommate in college is a crazy Patriot fan, and he is just ridiculous with the takes here. He texted me right away at 9:19 a.m. in the morning when this trade did go down. What a horrible trade. Who is our backup? Josh Dobbs, and he sent the puking emoji. He goes, I just think Drake May is going to get hurt at some point. I want a competent backup, not Josh Dobbs. And he just kept on going and going and going. And I said, Dimitri, I love you. You're a phenomenal roommate. You're a good friend of mine. I can't lose my mind over a guy in Joe Milton that all I've been told is about his potential and how great he was supposed to be in college and how great he's supposed to be in the NFL. Joe Milton is a backup. Joe Milton is a very nice Corvette that's in the driveway. But then when you get closer and closer and closer, you see that there's about 2 tires on the Corvette. The rearview mirror is broken off and the windshield is just smashed in. And there's no wiper fluid as well, and it's raining. That's what Joe Milton is. He looks the part, but when you ask him to continuously to succeed, he's not able to do it. So am I going to sit here and lose my mind over the Patriots swapping basically a 5th and a 7th? You know, the Pats getting a 5th and the Cowboys getting a 7th over a backup quarterback? Oh, stop. Stop. It was the same dopes who also told me, how did Bill Belichick not get more for Jimmy G? What happened to Jimmy G? He sucked. I know he got to a Super Bowl, but Jimmy G, he was made out of glass. And that's why he's now sitting on his ass as a backup in this league. So the Patriots should have gotten more than they did for Milton. I would have personally kept him as the backup, to be clear. I would have been fine with that. But do I think that they got robbed? The Cowboys, what are they bringing Joe Milton in to be? A backup. I know all you hot take artists and everything are going to be like, oh, here comes Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott is going to get benched and Joe Milton's going to be a starting quarterback. Give me a break. The Patriots should have gotten more than they did for Milton. Offside.
Offside.
Next question.
All right, the Cardinals, they made Trey McBride the highest-paid tight end in NFL history yesterday, giving him a 4-year extension worth $76 million, with $43 million of that guaranteed. Now, the average annual value is $19 million per year, and that tops Travis Kelce's previous record, which was $17.125 million per season. Onsides, offsides, if you're building an NFL team, you'd rather spend big money on a tight end opposed to a running back.
I'm actually going on sides for this one because, A, it's a pass-heavy league. Also, if it's a traditional tight end and the way that the tight end position is supposed to be played, they can maul people in the trenches, and now a lot of tight ends are also used as slot receivers as well. I think the wide receiver position slash tight end position is more important than the running back position where, yes, hey, Saquon Barkley could go to your team and could pop off. Derrick Henry could go to your team and pop off. But there's still a lot of teams that have been successful in the last 20 years of football that have won championships with running back by committees. Eagles first Super Bowl, running back by committee. Patriots, all their Super Bowls, running back by committee. there are a lot of teams that go running back by committee that end up winning a championship. So I think it's more important to have, in how much we now ask the quarterback to throw the football, a stud wide receiver slash tight end. I know this question is only about the tight end position. I still think it's more valuable than a running back. So if you're building an NFL team, you'd rather spend big money on a tight end opposed to a running back on sides.
All right. In each of the last two seasons, the Chiefs have played on Christmas Day, last year against the Steelers and the year before against my Raiders. Well, now according to...
You guys won that game.
We did, yeah, for once. So now according to Nate Taylor and Daniel Popper of The Athletic, the Chiefs have asked the NFL to make them a fixture on Christmas Day.
Oh, stop it.
Similar to how the Cowboys and Lions are staples of Thanksgiving Day. Onside to offsides, it would be a good idea to have Mahomes and the Chiefs on every Christmas.
And you know what? I want Beyonce to join me every Christmas Day as well to watch the games. Why do they need to get Christmas Day? I understand people say, oh, well, the Lions get Thanksgiving and the Cowboys get Thanksgiving. I would rotate them in. I don't think they need it. Like, most years they'll probably schedule them as long as Mahomes is there because he's the biggest draw in the NFL. But do we need to go out of our way to basically genuflect to the Chiefs and just give the Chiefs their own day? No, I wouldn't lock yourself in on one team on a particular part of the schedule each and every year. That is not something that's already rooted in tradition. So it would be a good idea to have Mahomes and the Chiefs on every Christmas. Maybe I'll be the Grinch here. I'm going offside.
Offside!
With Geno Smith extending his contract for two more seasons with the Raiders, questions remain if the silver and black should use the 6th overall pick on Shedeur Sanders if he is there when they're on the clock. Well, according to Vinny Bonsignor of the Las Vegas Review-Journal, this opens the door for the Raiders drafting a quarterback in the middle of the draft to develop, and he believes that Alabama's Jalen Milroe makes the most sense. Onside to offsides, if the Raiders don't draft Shedeur at 6, they should draft a quarterback in either the 2nd, 3rd, or 4th round.
I'm going to say offside, and here is why. I think if Shedeur is there at 6, they should take him. In the 2nd round, I don't love any of the quarterbacks in this draft class. If it's the 3rd or the 4th round, I'd be open to it. But if I'm the Raiders, I'm either taking a quarterback at 6 or I'm not taking one until the 3rd round. Now, if a Jackson Dart is still there, I think Jalen Milroe will be there. I don't believe Jalen Milroe is going in the 2nd round. There's just too much inconsistency with him. You know, Dylan Gabriel, he's not going in the first 2 rounds. I don't believe if you're not taking one at 6, and that would mean Shedeur is not off the board or the Raiders are just not going to take Shedeur, then there's probably not going to be a guy good enough where you're fine with him at 2, and then guys could start to fall where you then take him in the 3rd or the 4th round. So just because of the 2nd round in there, I'm going to go offside in answering this question very particularly.
Offside.
According to Shams, there is tension.
You Shams or Shams?
Shams.
Okay. I go Shams Charania.
Yeah.
Shams Charania?
Right. Yeah, it might be Shams.
Yeah, it's fine. We all say weird things. It happens.
So, according to Shams, there is tension between the Sixers and Joel Embiid for how they handled his injury this season.
Enough of the Sixers and enough of Joel Embiid. Honestly, this may be the last time we talk about the Sixers and Joel Embiid until they actually do something. They are insufferable.
So, Shams said, quote, "The team believed that Embiid needed to play at some point of the season, that he needed to get his conditioning right, playing and getting better that way. But Embiid felt that he needed surgery, and he ended up getting the surgery," end quote. Now, Philly season, of course, has been a complete nightmare. 23-54. Embiid, George, and Maxey are now all done for the season. Onsides, offsides, the Sixers should blow it up this offseason and trade Embiid.
I said they should have traded Joel Embiid last offseason. Now you're going to trade Joel Embiid off a year where he barely played or missed a lot of time, and you're going to expect to get a lot back in return. I still think you could get stuff for Embiid and get a nice compensation, a nice package for Joel Embiid, but I really thought last year was the year to do so, and for whatever reasons, the Sixers did not do that. But I am still on onsides here that the Sixers should blow it up this offseason and trade Joel Embiid because you're not winning a championship with him. I like Tyrese Maxey a lot. Paul George, you got to get rid of him. That's been a disaster. They couldn't find the 2nd right player for Joel Embiid for years. Now it's too late. And he's still a phenomenal player, but there's a lot of wear and tear on that body. And it's not only just not finding him the 2nd player. Joel Embiid, and I've pointed this out for years, in a lot of these crucial games, he is out of gas. He is not in shape, and he has a lot of turnovers in big spots. So he is a phenomenal player, don't get me wrong, but I think his time should end in Philadelphia, and it's best for both parties to move on. So the Sixers should blow it up this offseason and trade Joel the Process Embiid. I would go on sides.
So Ja Morant is once again under hot water. This time he mimicked.
Can I do his celebration on YouTube? Is that allowed? I don't know. Did you see the AI versions of it?
I don't think I did.
They have literally.
Oh, like actual.
They have put guns in his hands. Now there's enough videos of guns, or were they toy guns or whatever, in his hands. But they did that celebration that he did the other night with the air gun. And they put actual guns in his hands. If it's like, say hello to my little friend now.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, he was mimicking shooting a gun with his finger during Thursday's game against the Heat. This was after he was warned by the league for making a similar gesture earlier in the week. Now, Morant wasn't suspended, but the league did fine him $75,000 for the gesture. Onside, offsides, the NBA got it right with their punishment for Ja Morant.
So, if any other player did this in the league, I think I'd be ripping it. Because if you just do like a little gun celebration or something like that, and I guess I just did it for the YouTube cameras, or if you shoot like a bow and arrow or something like that, I don't think it's that big of a deal. But when you are Ja Morant, and this has been an issue with you, how much of a knucklehead can you actually be? And obviously, Ja Morant could be a big knucklehead. So the NBA got it right with their punishment for Morant. I'm fine with it. I'd probably be freaking out if it was any other player in the league, but it's not. So, yeah, I think the NBA got this one right. Onside.
All right, last one here. Ole Miss head coach Chris Beard will remain at Oxford despite being a finalist for the Texas A&M job.
We've kind of become the coach's show here.
Yeah,
we've had Beard on talking about his future, Chris Mack talking about his future, Porter Moser. Josh Pastner. You know, coaches come to talk to us about their futures, if they're ever being offered jobs or if maybe they're out of coaching and they want a job. Dan Mullen as well. All these coaches. I want a cut of their contract. I'm not even asking for 10%. How about like 2% of these deals that you're signing?
So according to multiple reports, Beard will receive a raise alongside an NIL budget that will be regarded as one of the top in the SEC. Onsides, offsides, Chris Beard will leave Ole Miss and take over a blue blood type program within the next 5 years.
Hotty toddy. They got a lot of money. And look, people have been trying to get Lane Kiffin away, and Lane Kiffin has not left Ole Miss. I think Chris Beard can be similar, but remember, Chris Beard was at Texas Tech, goes to Texas. We all know what happened off the court. And then he had to resurface at Ole Miss. I remember a few years back when Roy Williams retired, I was sitting here saying, what about Chris Beard to UNC? I'd place a phone call. I think Chris Beard's very happy at Ole Miss. I think he could coach at Ole Miss for the rest of his career. But when one of these big blue bloods open up, and UNC could be one, if Hubert Davis doesn't have a good year this upcoming year, then I could see Chris Beard leaving. I don't think Chris Beard's just leaving for Texas A&M. Like, let's say, and that obviously didn't happen. But if you tell me a UNC opens up, I could see Chris Beard leaving for that. So Chris Beard will leave Ole Miss and take over a blue blood type program within the next 5 years. I'm going to lean more onsides than offsides on this one. So we'll wrap it up there, going a little onsides for Chris Beard. All righty, 18 after the hour, Westwood One's Radio Row live at the Final Four. We'll come on back. This man, I thought he had a good chance of getting here. Now they ran into a juggernaut that is Duke. And man, Duke just frustrated them with their suffocating defense. But we will be joined by Nate Oates, the head man at Alabama, when we come on back in 5 minutes from San Antonio.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, welcome back in inside the Convention Center in San Antonio for the Final Four. This is Westwood One's coverage of the Final Four. Zach Gelb here with you on the Infinity Sports Network. And what a treat this is. Now joining us, he is the basketball coach at Alabama. He's going to be entering already his seventh season with the Crimson Tide. And that is Nate Oates, kind enough to join us right now. Coach, appreciate the time. How you been?
I've been great. I'd be a lot better if I wasn't on this show and I was coaching this week like last year. But, we had a good year. Great year compared to what, when I took over the program, but where we've gotten it to now, a little disappointed. We're still not playing. That was the plan, but in a one-game elimination tournament. It doesn't always work like that. And we ran into a pretty good team in Duke. They're very good.
Well, you ripped off the Band-Aid. I was going to start you off with a softball, be like ranch or blue cheese, because I know you're in Buffalo for all those years.
We can talk about that, too, if you'd like.
Well, go ahead.
You can't be in Buffalo and ask for ranch.
Yeah, thank you.
No, it's blue cheese. There's not even an option. But
it's a character flaw for me.
I have three daughters. They all ask for ranch. So I don't claim it. I'm like, what? But no, you go. Now, the real question, because that's not even a question if you've ever lived in Buffalo. It's they don't even offer ranch up there. The real question is whether you're going to, where do you get your wings?
Barbill.
Where do you go?
Barbill's my favorite. It's a newer spot. It's about 20 minutes from the football stadium, for the Bills.
So it was always Anchor Bar and Duff's was the big debate. Yep. So there's another one now. I don't, was that place even in existence when I was in Buffalo?
I don't know, but I was always Anchor Bar or Duff's because my sister and my cousin both went to SUNY Buffalo. And we always went to Duff's. I thought Anchor Bar was a little bit overrated.
Yeah, and Duff's was right there next to campus. We took our recruits to Duff's.
And then Barbill came on the scene and I've never looked
back.
Where's
Barbill?
I think it's East Aurora.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. The debate up there is not ranch or blue cheese. It's just blue cheese. Don't even ask. It's more like, where do you get your wings from?
I will send you a photo after this of the wings from Barbill, and I think you'll never go back to Duff's or Anchor Bar.
Yeah, there's a Santora's. If you had
I haven't.
That's right next to campus. They're pretty good, too, but yeah.
So when you go back to Saturday, since we ripped off the Band-Aid a little bit, just how do you look back at what happened up against the juggernaut that is Duke?
I mean, listen, so first off, I would have loved to save a few of those threes from the BYU game. Just if we could, bank them in the bank and use them 2 days later. So I do think after hitting 25 threes against BYU, Duke adjusted their pick and roll coverage. They built out and they've got great size. I mean, they start 6'6" across the board, 1-2-3, 6'9" point guard at the power forward spot. That's going to be in the NBA's for a very long time, and then a 7-2 center with a 9-8 standing reach. So it makes it hard to score at the rim. Their size, they did a great job building out on the three. We didn't shoot it as well as we had the first unanimous first team All-American in school history in Mark Sears. I thought their size bothered him a little bit. He didn't shoot it nearly. I mean, shooting at 10 threes the game before, and then he didn't have his best shooting night against Duke, but I thought their size bothered it. In hindsight, maybe we could have done a few things a little different to help try to get them freed up with it, but they switched everything. So when you've got a switchable lineup and you switch, and we didn't do a great job with our switch attack. And again, like when you're playing these tournaments and you don't have much practice time going in, you kind of revert back to some of your habits you built before. And as you get to the end of the year, you're not practicing much because you're trying to save the guy's legs. So we had, A lot of reasons we didn't play particularly well against Duke. Biggest reason, they're extremely good, very well coached, and they played great. And we just didn't get it done. And you're in a one-game elimination tournament, and that's it. So, I haven't even watched the whole thing yet. I started to watch on the flight back, and I put it away. This is for another day. We'll get to it in a few weeks, maybe.
Nate Oates here with us from Alabama. You have had sustained success at Alabama. You have proven that Alabama could be more than just a football school, and I absolutely love Alabama football, to be clear. But now the question becomes, is this program ready to go win a national championship? How close do you think you guys are?
I'm right there. I mean, you look, Houston's the only program that's made more Sweet 16s since I've gotten to Alabama. Back-to-back Elite Eights. You look at the teams that were in the Final Four last year, out of the four that were in there, we went the longest this year. We were the last one standing this year. So, we've got the number one strength of schedule in the country the last 2 years, and we're right there, if not number one. We're top five every year, and we're in the top five in Power Four conference wins the last 5 years. So we're knocking on the door. Do we get the elite talent that Duke gets? Not as much every year, but we're right there. We had Brandon Miller, who's second pick in the draft. We've been able to get our playing style. Recruits want to come. We've proved you can win playing this style. We've proved you can get to a Final Four. We just got to keep knocking on the door. And these one-game elimination tournaments like the NCAA tournament, there's a little bit of luck involved, but there's also, if you get good enough, you can like Danny Hurley last year kept saying they were indestructible, bulletproof, and we're not quite there yet.
Your journey is incredible. 2013, you're right, you were just wrapping up at high school. We know what you did at Buffalo as an assistant, what you've done at Buffalo as a head coach, and now what you've done in Alabama. Why is what you do just able to work in the college game?
But, it's analytically based. I think there's a method behind it. We've been able to get really good players to come, and we play a style that we talk about efficiency. I'm a former math teacher, so we try to be efficient. I think it's the way we study the NBA. The NBA just does basketball. We have to do a lot of other stuff, so we try to steal a lot of the NBA. We put an NBA system in that's analytically based. It's efficient on both sides of the ball. When our defense was top 30 this year. We've had a top three defense in the country two of our years at Alabama. And then we get players that want to make it to the NBA. We develop them. They've got there. I think the whole thing works well. We've been able to turn a football school into a much more of a well-rounded athletic department. And when it goes talking about men's basketball and football, our women's basketball team's been good too. A lot of the athletic teams at Alabama have done well. There's six national championships, six sports that have won national championships. Shoot, football's won 18. So I think we're at a really good athletic department and player style that players want to come to, and we've been able to win a lot of games.
The last thing I ask you, because I know you got to run, Nate Oates from Alabama, you've gone up against all four teams here in the Final Four. Just what's your breakdown from?
I mean, listen, Auburn and Florida both are super well balanced, really well coached. It's going to be a great game. It's going to come down to who can make right shots at a higher clip. Yeah, it is. And then the other side, it's a little bit more. Duke's young, but those guys don't play like freshmen. They're super talented. They got great size everywhere. Houston plays extremely hard and makes life really difficult with their defense. It's going to be interesting to know, how aggressive, physical they are on defense affect some of the freshmen at Duke. Cooper Flagg, like the way he, I don't know. Like, those guys have proven to be pretty good. I thought they were great when we played them. That, to me, is going to be very, very interesting to watch. That game right there.
Last thing, if you ever win a championship at Alabama, does Rico Bosco, does he get a ring?
Rico's my guy. Yeah, we should definitely give him a ring. He's got my back out there in the media with you guys all the time. So
I'm telling you, those bus trips are tough. You got to get back to the Final Four and win a championship for him.
I know, man. We got to get it there for him. Rico's our guy.
Coach, great to reconnect with you. Thanks so
all
much.
All right, appreciate it. Roll Tide.
There he is, a writer, if you know what I'm talking about. And Coach Nate Oates joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Good conversation with him. Make this spring a stylish one with on-trend looks for every occasion when you shop at Kohl's and Kohl's.com, where families come first. There are certain college basketball coaches that they just have that raspy voice. Izzo, Brad Underwood, Nate Oates, that they could talk about anything and I could just listen. But Nate Oates, he kind of checks all the boxes in terms of what I wanted to guess. Has a great story from being a high school coach, assistant on Bobby Hurley's staff. You want to talk about another maniac. And then took over Buffalo, few NCAA tournament appearances. And then what he's done at Alabama, he has got to a spot now that the only thing that has not been done is to get to that championship game and win that championship game. But he's been to a Final Four. They have improved that program immensely. And you could even tell he was a little careful to say it because you want to still be sensitive. You know what drives the train in Alabama. It's the football program. But he basically said, we've proven we could be more than just a football school is what he was getting at. And he's absolutely right because of the fact that you look at, remember Kentucky with Calipari? And he said, Mark Stoops who said it. We're more than just a basketball school. And with how much football drives the train, Mark Stoops didn't like that. He said, hey, we're a basketball school. And Mark Stoops was like, oh, what about our football program? And since Stoops has the backing of the money with football and how big that is, even though it's Kentucky basketball, we all know they're a basketball school, Calipari had to kind of apologize. I think the Alabama athletic department's in a good spot right now. We're sure Nick Saban is no longer the head coach, but with that being said, I believe in Kalen DeBoer. Now, Kalen DeBoer has to make the playoff this year or it's going to get ugly there quickly, and I'm a believer and a supporter of Kalen DeBoer. But the basketball program, the last 4 or 5 years, Oates is now going into 7. They have done a sensational job, and you have these two big programs now, and I would assume that Alabama football is going to continue to be Alabama football, but now you have to take the basketball program not only seriously, but you expect them to get back to a Final Four. You expect them to be in the mix to go win a national championship, and that's the one thing left on what is a early but very impressive resume of Nate Oates. And look how quick, right? At a mid-major in Buffalo, was able to win. At Alabama, first big job in the SEC. And sometimes when you take a big job, but we've seen coaches that have been darlings of the NCAA tournament, have been at these mid-majors, have been at these smaller schools, and then they get to the big job and they are a chicken without their head on, just absolutely cut off. And they're just in far too deep and they can't find a way to get the job done, and they got to go somewhere else. For Nate Oates, he's made that seamless transition where it's from high school into college as an assistant, into a first-time head coaching job in college, and then his first major job, which Alabama is now a major job. And he's someone, we talk about Chris Beard potentially leaving Ole Miss for a blue blood. I think that Nate Oates doesn't leave Alabama unless if it's for a blue blood, but he is fit there. And he has created his own identity and his own way at Alabama, and it's been very impressive. So I appreciate him jumping on board with us. By the way, take your game day rituals on the road with Marriott Bonvoy. Over 30 hotel brands for every kind of fan. Explore more. Make sure you do this at MarriottBonvoy.com/NCAA. One more segment on Westwood One's Radio Row for the Final Four. I am going to the games tomorrow. We'll hopefully be back on Monday. If I'm stranded in San Antonio on Monday and I got to do another show here, that's going to be something. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of engineers here that won't be happy with me. But there is a chance that that always happens, especially with how now we fly in this country. But we'll come on back. We actually have a new listener song. This was sent my way. I saw it on the good old cesspool that is Twitter. So we'll take a look into a new listener song that was sent to us. And before we close out shop here and close things down, we, of course, when I said like McAfee there, down, how about just down? We will also take you through some predictions and go a little against the spread and tell you who's going to win coming up on Saturday to be playing in the national championship game on Monday evening. Let's send it back to New York City studios. I will get it right this time. And standing by with the latest sports flash is our dear friend, our leader, my captain, El Capitan, Marco Belletti.
You're listening to the Zach Gelb Show.
All righty, it's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Marcus in Long Beach says, Zach, who do you have advancing to the national championship game on Monday night? You could submit a question by tweeting at INF Sportsnet or at Zach Gelb. That's ZACHGELB using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Before we get to that answer, we have a new listener song. So I guess this has become a thing now because we've had multiple songs sent our way. Usually the great Psych Mamter sends in a few songs. I think we have a new guy sending in songs. I'll get his name as my mentions are just crazy right now. But I had his name and then I lost it. But there is, Wolfram Jack Bobby. So whoever the heck is that? Oh, actually, I've interacted with this guy on Twitter before. He has not adjusted his photos that he uses of me because I think he first became accustomed to me when I was a very gargantuan individual. So now when he puts my face on things and makes me sing, it looks nothing like me anymore. But anyway, this fine individual did send us a new listener song, so we will debut it right now, and then we'll kind of be like Paula Abdul, Randy Jackson, and Simon Cowell. And this is not the greatest trifecta like those three were. That was the big three. Now it's like the three duds here, or the three dunces here, with Stu, Samter, and yours truly. But here is a new listener song. Let's sample about a minute and 20 seconds of it. Go ahead, take it away.
The sun comes up, a coffee in my hand. Infinity sports out across the land. Maggie and McMuffin, they start the show with the day's first stories. Let's get up and go. Hey, 5252, 242, 220's the line. No carry me through. Zach Gelb takes over when the day's in swing. Afternoons roll by with the insights he brings. JR's the voice when the sun starts to fall. Evening reflections, he's there for us all. Bart Winkler's calm in the dead of the night. A beacon of wisdom neath the moon's soft light. And when night turns deep as you're trying to rest, Icky and Shep and Wolf make those hours the best.
All righty, Stu, first up, your thoughts, your review here.
I like it. It is not as good as some of the songs we played previously, like the Shep songs. The AI Shep songs are really good.
The Shep songs about LeBron not getting back to him was awesome. I wonder what Shep was thinking when LeBron went on McAfee. Was he like, oh, I was on to something?
he might, that's a win for
him,
probably.
Close. Yeah. You know, if McAfee didn't request it, maybe the Lakers would get back to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Solid. So I think very solid. Not as good as some of the other ones, but still good.
Out of a letter grade, what is it?
I would go with a B minus.
Okay. Samter?
Yeah, that one wasn't my
favorite. You would kind of be fine. The Simon Cowell of the bunch,
would,
by the
100%.
Way.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of that one. That one was fine. It
Stu is definitely Paula Abdul.
Oh, Stu.
I would be Randy Jackson and you would be Simon Cowell.
Well, I think that works, but it was fine. But it, of the ones that we've heard of the AI ones, it wasn't there.
Yeah, I thought the Hickey song was better.
Oh, that's
by
right.
The way, Hickey, Mike, I just saw you on the YouTube stream. I haven't seen you in like 2 days. I just like, what was this face that just popped up on the screen? That was a little startling. But no, I would agree. I thought the Hickey song was really good. The Shep songs about LeBron were the best. This one, it was nice because it brought the whole network together. You know, I would have liked the Bill Reiter plug maybe in there. You know, they got pretty much every no Rich Eisen mentioned.
No.
They got the phone number wrong, but that was a recent change, so I can't crush people for that. I would say it could use some work. You know, it's a no for me, dog, from now. But if you come back next year with the better song next week, you know, maybe it could be a little bit better. I think we've set a high enough standard with these listener songs that one could use a little work. Is that fair?
I think it's fair. Now, Terry Wilson on the chat says country sucks. I think it's good though because
I'm from Texas right now.
I'm saying we're in San Antonio. It's perfect for where we're at right now. It's well on theme.
Yeah. People are Mendoza goes Paula Abstula. Stula. All righty, let's get to some predictions to answer the Ask the Pros question of the day. Florida and Auburn. This pains me because I really want Auburn to win. I'm a Bruce Pearl guy. Ah, the points are just saying, take them, take them, take them. I picked Florida and Duke before the tourney. I'm not looking back here. I think Walter Clayton Jr. is just the most entertaining player in this tournament. Going into a football stadium here, you never know how that kind of works, but I think Florida's just going to edge past Auburn. This has been a favorite tournament, Stu. I'm taking the Gators here, laying the 2.5. Yourself?
I agree with you. I thought earlier in the week I was kind of leaning Auburn, but the more I listened to people and more I thought about it, I think Florida's I just think they're a better team, so I'll pick them.
Samter, you making this 3-for-3 here?
No, I'm going to Auburn, baby.
Okay, so Samter's taking Auburn outright, plus the 2.5 points and sprinkle it on the money line if you're listening to Samter. Alrighty, Houston and Duke. I feel like Houston has just been, in a big-time way, disrespected. And I've been part of it. I've acknowledged the greatness of Kelvin Sampson. I've acknowledged the greatness of that team. It's not really me disrespecting Houston. It's just more so how I view Duke. And could this be one of those moments in sports history where we look back at it and you say, okay, Duke, everyone thought they were going to win. And then it's weird to call Houston an underdog. They're not your traditional underdog because they are a number one overall seed with 4 number one overall seeds. But the lesser team, the team that's not expected to win, they end up getting the job done. We've seen bigger upsets than if we walk out of Saturday and Houston beats Duke. But I'm not betting against Duke right now. I'm going to lay the number here. It's been a favorite tournament. I honestly don't like either of these spreads, and I've done decent on the spreads in the tournament. But this has been a favorite tournament, so I'm not going to second guess it here. I'm taking Florida laying 2.5, and I'm taking Duke laying 5.5. Mr. Duke, Stu Kovacs.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Duke from 20 years ago. I had Houston winning it all in my original bracket. I had them beating Duke in the Final Four to get to the championship. But the way that Duke has played in this tournament, I don't think anyone's beating them. So I do think they're going to beat Houston.
So I have Florida and Duke on Monday night. You have Florida and Duke on Monday night. Samter has Auburn. And will they be going up against the Dukies?
Stu, I'm a little bit disappointed that you're going against your pre-tournament pick. I mean,
I'm with you, Samter. Right? I thought that was lame.
I know.
If you picked them to go all the way, stick with it, man. Stick with it. I know Duke's playing well, but you know what? Houston just crushed Tennessee. So, I mean, it's not like they're playing bad basketball either. So I'm a little bit disappointed.
Should I trip Stu tonight when we take our stroll down the Riverwalk so he falls in?
You should trip Stu anytime, anywhere. You should always be tripping Stu.
Gotcha.
Because Stu is tripping. But yeah, I'm going Duke, of course, as well. Cooper Flagg is going to dominate, and Cole Conknipple, however you pronounce his name, is going to dominate. It's going to be Duke, and it's going to be Duke and Auburn.
All righty. Well, we appreciate all the great engineers here, a part of the Westwood One staff, you know, the creme de la creme in our business, all the great engineers on site. Also, big thanks to Stu, Samter, Botcher, back in our New York City headquarters. And fine thank you to all the fine folks here at Westwood One, obviously, for having us out the last few days for San Antonio, in San Antonio for Radio Row. Big thanks today to Chris Mack for joining us, Jason Horowitz, Nate Oates, Dana Altman did stop by as well. And fun show. We will talk to you on Monday back in our New York City headquarters, hopefully, at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific time. Enjoy the games, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.